What mic are you on? Still sounds weird. You good?
Oh, yep. Sure, SM7B.
Yar.
A black hole.
Sounds good. Could be the new ASMR channel. It's just like a black video. You just listen to someone drinking their coffee.
Can I just... What happens? Does that happen in the video now? I'm just black.
Yeah.
I'm not pretending to be black. My screen was black, just to be clear for those listening.
I understood. Not
my face, just the screen.
I understood. I can see you loud and clear.
I understand.
What are you posting?
Not like a Mr. Show bit. I understand.
Oh, FaceTime Party Snoozer. Sleep right through parties and social gatherings without anyone noticing.
My accountant tells me that I might be eligible for a 436 rebate now.
Sure, why not?
As a small business owner, that's exactly what you want to hear.
I understand.
So I'm thinking, rebate, sign
okay.
me up, of course.
Yes.
It's 10 bullets. Tom Sachs.
Oh, yeah. What am I posting? Oh, posting. We have this... I hear myself again.
Yep. True.
It's a really fairly cool, complicated speaker parts made out of apple ply. We've done probably 6 runs of them for this customer that I think to date they've all been for himself. And he did mention something about wanting to start a company around it. So I don't know what stage. He sent me like renderings. I think he sent me some final shots, but they're like the most complicated plywood parts we make for sure. It takes me like almost 2 hours to program them usually.
Sheesh. What? How many?
Just
what?
A
what,
lot
what?
Of features.
Wow. That's a lot of cam time. Maybe I'm out of the cam loop because John does it all, but that sounds involved as.
I think some of it's that too, that I just don't do enough of it anymore. I do overwhelmingly feel like it just takes way too long to program cam still. Like it just it shouldn't take as long as it does. It's tedious.
So a customer's come to you, they want to productize it. How much input have you given this person on decision making around how to actually make it? Or you just
this time, kind of nothing. I mean, I've always given him feedback on specifically because I think when he first came to us, he had like, I don't remember if we had upgraded the shop saver at that point. I want to say there was like 7 or 8 drill sizes on one set of parts, you know, on one sheet. And I was like, we have 5 tools. I'm going to have to change them mid run, you know, like, and so that he combined a bunch of sizes, but there's still a decent amount. And I think they're very well designed. Like they're clean parts. They're just complicated to machine on a router, I think. Like, and he's paying a lot of money for high quality parts. So I don't want to mess any, they're not like 2D cutouts, you know, like.
Yeah. I find there's always a bit of tension there in terms of like someone bringing unproven product. It's like, yeah, like we're doing some customer parts at the moment. We've just finished a job for some customer parts and like they came with really high spec check drawings with like very specific tolerance call outs and they're to fit.
Right.
Oh, that's a timber part that's press fitting onto an injection molded plastic part. And so we've got the plastic parts here to test fit on and get a feel for it. But it's like, it's at the end of the day, it's timber.
Right.
And it's solid timber and there's some really fine tolerances in the mix. And like, I think we've done a really good job, but it's also,
yeah,
there's a line there of like I just glanced an email this morning about some parts that had cracked and I was like, yeah, well, there's some like crazy thin wall sections in this part. Like, yep. I'm not surprised.
I think after having metal machining capabilities for a few years now, the night and day difference, it like made me less sure about my CNC routing capabilities and way more sure about making metal parts with a mill having both, because it's like wood is just like hilariously, I won't say impossible, but it's just I've gone backwards on tolerance capabilities to customers about wood parts, because I'm just like, between the machine getting older and like work holding and, you know, swelling, you know, by the time they pick up the parts, has the humidity changed? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's just silly. So we're selling the router. No.
Heard it here first. They're cool looking parts. Are they double sided? Do you have to flip some of those?
No, I have convinced him to keep them to one side. He did have some double thick parts. They were like an inch and a half that he was thinking about, and I was like, we can do it. It's just going to be expensive, man. Like,
yeah,
it's a lot to get your parts made, these kind of parts made. I mean, you look at it, you probably think that's not that complicated, and I think I did too to some degree.
No,
those corners are blended.
Yeah.
You can't chamfer them.
I've quoted parts like this. Can I say what the category is, or is that giving too much away?
Yeah, they're speakers.
Yeah. I get a lot of
high-end speakers.
Surprisingly high number of quote requests for speaker components, it feels like.
It kind of makes sense for you, I think.
Yeah.
With like your kit apart stuff,
so.
You know?
I think only one has converted ever.
Yeah.
But a lot come across my desk.
Well, like our first aluminum job for the router, like 2019, was a very expensive high-end half-inch thick sheet aluminum, like entertainment center. It was like hundreds and hundreds of pounds just to store an entertainment, like a hi-fi system. And we've now done 3 runs for that guy of those parts. And I think he maybe had one of them where it was for a client, but 2 of them were for himself. He's just like upgrading his system. And they're like, much money in terms, you know, and what I'm building for him is like nothing, you know, in the cost of his system.
Yeah. Some of that gear is crazy money. It's amazing.
Like 50 grand for a speaker, you know, like it's just. Yeah, I always it's funny. I like this customer. I like most customers, but I like him. He always listens and just like good to work with. And they're kind of fun to make, and almost like a good bragging rights of like, these are cool parts. I'm happy to make them, you know?
Yeah.
And like, even if they're a lot, you know, but that's kind of what you sign up for when you're like wanting to do not just cabinet parts. So.
Yeah, totally. I feel like Apple Ply. I'm all right. Apple Ply is a throwback to the early days of us recording together and like COVID plywood supply struggles.
Yep. I still have a video that does pretty well on like shorts or something about how I went and bought scrap material because it was becoming so. It was like dropped from another shop. And
I
was like, is this the last Baltic birch in America? You know, like made it like really dramatic. People still kind of like hate comment on it. Like, I can get it now. I was like, that was 2021. That's 5 years ago.
Far out.
We still use Apple Pie quite a bit, and it's kind of, it's just such a great product that when people want, you know, consistency and quality, it's just, you know, you pay a little bit for it more and you get what you get. The thickness is like dead on. Typically,
it's nice.
Stronger. Veneers are thick.
Yeah, we've got yet another plywood stock change incoming, which is always a bit of a nightmare for kit parts because of its dimensional stack up. But not much we can do. Just waiting for the new stock to land and see how thick it actually is. It's supposed to be 15. Never is 15, but we shall see.
Have you thought about doing aluminum shelves?
No.
Honestly, it could be some cool, like, alternative. It'd be really heavy, obviously, but maybe, like, sexy sheet metal. Is that a thing?
Yeah, totally. I mean, sexy sheet metal is always a thing. Oh, yeah. I love that stuff.
Got to close this fusion on the side. I guess before
fusion.
We jump off there, I did finally just try out a thought that I've had for a while, and I made a super easy way to go from Airshop inquiries to open a file without downloading it or uploading it into Fusion locally.
And I saw that. Sick.
It's like 2 clicks, and it just opens like step files, like IGIS, F3D, OBJ, I want to say. For me, it's like mostly step files, but I had a feeling it would work because of the way that other script I made worked so easily. I just didn't know if it needed, like, there was a way to do it without having to download the file, and it works brilliantly.
Yeah, I was very impressed. Very impressed. So that'll be baked into AirShop now. You can just click
it's,
through.
Yeah, it's, blip, blip. It's there now. Yep.
Sick.
It's very put a cool. Little, my little video to it in the links if you'd like.
I had a stayed up. It's a Thursday night seems to be my like prime stay up late in cursor daddy coding. Daddy time coding. Daddy's coding. Quiet.
Daddy's coding. There's the new video song. Song first there. Hold on. Beep.
Insert so clip here. I let's say I got a taste for what for like last night in cursor. I was like, oh, this is what Justin's doing. This is how Justin must do it. This is the proper way.
Use GitHub?
Yeah, I used Git. I was a good boy. And I plan things. I actually used the plan function in cursor. And I did the thing that you've suggested many times, which I had, to be honest, I have tried and it's failed every time, yeah, of like completely refactoring the Kitaparts builder.
Yeah, into right. A and it's modern, so much better now.
Into a contemporary code base. But this time it worked. And Cursor did a plan, knocked it, refactored. It's not online, by the way. Oh, it's linked in Airtable, actually, to a test deployment. But it looks exactly the same and still got plenty of bugs. But it
it's on Vercel, baby. I love it.
It did an amazing job. In about 20 or 30 minutes.
You can select everything and move it at once?
Yeah, that was for you, baby.
So good.
And I did Rhino crossing marquee logic where it like one direction captures and the other direction grabs.
God. Yeah. There's some weird, the CAD nerds. Just while we're on the topic, there's some weird thing where only select past the floor, like drag a
yeah,
window
that's
past
annoying.
The floor very far.
Let me add that to the bug list now.
Cool. Sorry, I got too excited and interrupted you.
I don't know what I'm saying. I just had, yeah, I had this sense as I was doing it of like, oh, this is the proper way of doing it. This is fun. Feels all grown up. Anyway, the refactor actually worked for the first time, having tried that a few times. So I'm excited now. There's a mobile, finally a mobile version coming of the Kitaparts builder. On the way.
Well, let me simulate that. Hold on.
Because you can. It doesn't work yet.
No, it doesn't work. I was like, at all. Don't want to burst your bubble. It's not working right now. Cool. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that worked. It's, you know, you kind of get there on your own pace. It took me a flipping year to get to some of this stuff and like not accidentally erase half of my progress every night. So...
Yeah, sure. And now I understand how you can burn through so many tokens after that session. I was like, oh, wow, yeah, that was juicy.
What?
I saw the money just like trickling away there.
What if it made like a little cash register noise every time you entered, like, ching,
ching, ching, ching, ching.
Your coins cool. Falling on the floor slowly.
Yep.
I've been having a lot of success with the code. I haven't used GPT models like at all, but the 5.3 and 5.4 have been really good, and the 5.3 codex I've been using a lot lately
in
and it's
cursor?
Been really yeah it's been
interesting.
Well, so like Claude is good, but it's like the most expensive still, like token wise so
is it?
I will use it, but I've found that the codex is like doing just as well, and it's like way cheaper, meaning like I'm not spending 10 days on my plan and then running out of all my credits anymore. So that seems like a huge win.
Sick. Very good.
And Composer 1.5.
Yeah. I mean, that's the default one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's decent. When you need, like, when it fails or you want to do, like, a bigger, more complicated thing, I use the big boys.
Yeah. Nice. I've worked, so... During the week, I think last week I chatted about starting to do more just sort of day-to-day work in Cursor over Sim Theory. And I think since we last spoke, I've moved my entire like daily email Airtable workflow into Cursor.
Email?
Yeah.
Email? How do you do that?
I've connected...
like a local server?
No, I've just connected Gmail.
To Cursor?
To Cursor via MCP. And so I've got a dedicated workspace, which is like my daily to-do list, basically.
That
has an MCP connection to Gmail and to Airtable. And so it's managing all of my sales leads. Well, I am managing all of my sales leads in this one spot. It can read the inbox. It can triage my emails. I'm trying to not have my email open in front of me. That's one incentive of this. But it occurred to me this morning writing it on the show notes list of like, is this Gems just like 6 monthly bullshit list change disguised as like a, oh, I'm being so much more efficient. It's totally worth it. Which I think is what's going on. But anyway.
But in this case, you can have it reformat it really fast for you.
That's right.
Spice it up, baby.
Keep me entertained. Anyway, it's working well for me. It's cool. Like a winner job.
Yeah.
It can, or like, you know, over the last weekend, there were a couple of emails that came in like with shipping issues from jobs that were, say, like missing a part or something. It scans the email. It picks those up. It pulls the Airtable record for that job back into production, marks it as fix required, puts a note in the planning field about what needs to be done. And so Monday morning, those jobs are already in Airtable, pre-tagged, pre-notated based on emails. So there's potential there. I'm kind of excited about it. But the main thing I want it to keep me on top of is just my sales, like follow-ups, quotes. Like there's so much stuff that gets lost in the inbox. And so I'm hoping this will do a better job of holding me to account, but we'll see what happens when the novelty wears off. I don't know.
Yeah. I've been hesitant to like, I think I told you I've been using Claude Code so much.
I'm super curious.
Quite a bit. And connected, what's nice is it does have like the MCP and connections kind of built in. So I've been using it in coordination with my job applications, which have gone really well. I'm about to interview a couple of people in the next 2 days. Kind of a lot of applicants, which is good. And you never really like, since it's like not industry specific, you know, it's like I'm looking for a skill set basically that's transferable. And I've been kind of shocked at, happily surprised that so many people found the listing acceptable in what they're looking for or work, right? Like I'm not hiring like a machinist or a woodworker. So it's just, I haven't done a lot of that kind of hiring. But anyway, I connected... that goes into an Airtable, all those applications, and a connected Claude to that. And what's cool is you can give it like specific read, write, or even like delete access, whether you confirm it or let it just do it. And so it had defaulted to almost all of the like destructive or change things as ask for permission first, which is such a good step compared to like what I'm used to with SimTheory, where it's just like YOLO mode. Like,
yeah.
Would you like everything deleted? Oh, sorry, I already did that. So I was going to ask, have you like integrated any kind of backups into this in case it goes awry?
I've put in a whole bunch of safety rules into like the agent instructions, which so far it seems to be seems to be doing a decent job of following. Like the other day, I had an email from a supplier about material price increases across the board, and I got it to digest it and update the inventory base with all the pricing and add notes about what the prices were and what changed and stuff. It was during that process, it was like, oh, I'm not allowed to update more than 3 Airtable records at a time, and I had to like coax it. Like, you know, in this case, you can. Oh, I'd have to sort of click through every time so I could do another 3. So I'm trying to bake in a little bit of safety there of like it can't get too click happy. I don't know.
I'll give you the warning that between changing computers and the app itself has changed. And there was a big blow up on their forums about this. The Cursor made a non-announced change that let a thing change where suddenly it was like, I forget what it was. It was giving write credit to cursor on your GitHub, and there was a, it, they automatically turned it on by default when you updated, and so people just suddenly had credits to cursor as like an author on your GitHub, which is minor, right, but also it's like kind of effed up.
Yep.
Gotcha. Because more or less what that also can imply is that it has some type of ownership over the work, which is hotly contested right now, as well as just like settings change and suddenly they don't respect these rules. So I was just, my one thought was, I think Airtable lets you do a backup to Google Drive, like connect it to a something, so you could maybe just have it somewhere else too.
Somewhere else? Just maybe?
Maybe, since it's pretty valuable for you.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day, we ran a third-party app that backed up our Airtable base every day. I'm pretty sure I killed that when we downsized. I don't think I pay for that anymore. I'll have to go and look. But yes, I'll just ask Cursor to add that to my to-do list so it does.
Can you just back up for me? Like, sure, it never does it.
Sure. Yeah. I know you asked me to do that, but...
I just saw it the other day because I was setting up the authentication for the hiring thing, and...
Yeah.
I think it was unchecked, so I need to find it for myself.
I'm super curious about two things. Hiring, how that's going, but also your transition to Claude. But tell me about hiring process. How's that going? I failed my test.
Shh, nobody knows about that yet. Okay. Shh. Let's see. Yeah, I'll probably talk about that after I'm done hiring that little bit. But I did use Indeed paid promotion for the listing. It was like $20 a day max or something. I think I've spent $150 and I've got almost 300 clicks through. And I think we're at like 35 or 40 applications. And prior to that, I think I had like less than 8 or something like that before I got on Indeed, which is just, it's kind of like a aggregator or like a advertising platform in as such. So it goes out to all these other platforms to have the listing, I think.
Okay.
And then I have them come to our website and apply, which probably limits how many people apply, but it also means that they're not just blindly applying through like some one click system. Mm-hmm. And it's gone well. I'm actually shocked to this point that very few of them, and I even had Claude go through them, seem like they're applying with AI tools. I thought for sure I would see this round, like a lot of people just filling questions with AI, but there's enough errors and like interesting writing styles that I'm pretty certain it's not, unless they've got really well-trained AI tools. That kind of surprised me. But otherwise I have, I'd say at least 5 people that just based on application, I could probably hire within the budget I was looking, or the pay range I was looking for, and skill sets that range from like 15 years as a importer, exporter.
What does he do?
He's an importer.
Just imports, no exports?
He's an importer, exporter, okay?
For goods in and out of the country, which shocked me. I was like, that's a crazy skill set. Which at first I was like, oh, this person for sure. And then I went back and I was like, no, I think the point is like, this is a customer facing, like not so much like help me source stuff all day long. So I've had, it's been good. There's big range, a lot of good skill sets.
How are you feeling about finding a good cultural fit? Because you're like a micro team of 2.
I'm difficult, you're saying.
I'd have some nerves around introducing the third wheel and how that dynamic's going to flow. What is your thinking at in that respect in terms of selecting someone?
I tend to go by my gut in-person conversations. I'm not against somebody moving here for it, but I don't think many have applied for that kind of scenario. So I do have a couple that I think are coming in the next, by the end of the week here, and we're just my usual, nah, maybe somebody, they won't listen to this by the time they're here, but yeah, we just basically walk around and talk and then usually have a little bit more private conversation. Usually whoever works here has some, Ricky or somebody else will chat a little bit with them. And I mean, you can fake your way through a lot of that, I suppose. I don't have like an extensive list of questions. I think I remember last time we were hiring, we talked about this too. Like, I don't have any like real good trick questions. I do have this interesting tool I'm using this time, which I'll talk about a little bit after hopefully this hire goes through.
Sure.
That I think's been insightful. I don't know. Do you have any advice?
I don't know. I think that would just be on my mind. I mean, it's on my mind thinking about your scenario, but I'm trying to apply it here. If, you know, I've been solo in the office now for 2 years, and other than Laura working in here a bit, like, I think I'd be nervous about rehiring an admin position.
Yes.
Just in terms of, cool, I got to shit next to this person now.
You have another bathroom, right? No, I know exactly what you mean.
Like, yeah, I don't know what the answer is.
They're off the desk because it's like, it was my prototype desk. Like, it was just covered with junk, you know, and you're basically seeing all of it when you watch the video of this. Like, it's not a big office. And I was starting to think, like, do I need to do a little gym and make a little cubby office somewhere that's like, you know, 6x6 somewhere in the back where it's like, what am I going to do? I remember when I had that one hire for a little while that didn't work out working in here, they would like head off out of here during the recording. It's like, are they going to work quietly in the corner during the podcast? Which is one small part, but it's like, if they're doing a lot of phone calls, like, how does that work in a tiny space? Like, yeah, there's stuff to figure out, but I hope you would hope that the person you're hiring will be helpful in figuring that out, and we'll both be somewhat flexible. And
yeah,
some of it's like, you got to let go and let the AI gods just, you know, lead you. Gotta let the seven lead you.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Exciting.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to think. I was honestly, as I went out to start hiring, I unfortunately had the thought, I think because the last one didn't really work out super well, it's like, I don't have a lot of confidence I'm going to find the right fit. But after seeing how many applications there are, as like, and the skill sets, like people that had worked in manufacturing and maintenance roles and led restaurants and just a bunch of people coming from the healthcare industry, which is interesting that they've like gotten out, which unfortunately in America doesn't seem too surprising, but also unfortunate for all of us that probably could use them in that industry. Anyway. What's going on with you?
On the sharing of an office with other people, had our first AI-based redundancy this week. Laura losing her title as spreadsheet queen.
Spreadsheet titles.
I realized it was 2 years since I started this Profit First, almost to the week. It was to the week since I started, downsized the business and switched to the Profit First accounting system. And I was like, cool.
Profit First.
2 years. It's time for a spreadsheet rebuild, because that old one, which I think you've seen, I think I shared a copy of it with you, was just like, has always been a mess, and it's had rebuild on rebuild, had all this old redundant.
For us, though.
Yeah. Had all this data in it. And so it was after our chat about Profit First last week and you saying you had a Profit First agent. I came away inspired and sort of plugged in a whole lot of data, historical data into Cursor and bashed out a whole lot of ideas of how I want the rebuild to be. And it smashed out a Python script that generated a Excel, I guess so, spreadsheet file of some sort.
Something
that imported cleanly into Google Docs. And so I've got like a new Profit First dashboard that Cursor built. Mm-hmm. I was pretty happy with it. It's not, and this is Laura's complaint with it too, other than losing her job to it. She was like, it's kind of a little bit weird. Yeah. She's like, it's a little bit weird with its, I don't like, it doesn't have enough formulas in it. I was like, yeah, like there are a lot of dead numbers in it. Like it's okay at linking and sort of building the formulas into the logic, but it's a little bit dumb in terms of how it's built.
It did a lot better than what I was expecting and what I've done.
More, me too.
MCB connections, especially updating after the fact. It would always be like, I'll make you a new one. And I was like, no.
Nah, yeah.
Another new one.
This is still in that paradigm of like, it will just make a new one if I want changes. I haven't worked out a way to mod what I've got. Because I think spreadsheet files are binary or whatever that, like they're not editable directly in that sense. Anyway, not sure.
Okay, it probably depends on a lot of things, I suppose.
Yeah, a lot of dependencies. Anyway, I'm pretty impressed with it. And did the first distribution in it the other day. And yeah, so yeah, 2 years into Profit First and never going back, baby.
I planned when the money starts happening in Airshop, it's going to be used there too. Like I'm going to use the same. It's going to be from the beginning, which is interesting. And I don't have like any major thoughts because like the overhead and like there's such a different spectrum of needs for Airshop right now. Meaning like almost none. Like I don't really have utilities and stuff. Like I am excited that I will be starting from like a healthy place rather than like kind of no plan.
Totally.
Both all my other business things.
Yeah, that'd be weird starting with a clean slate business.
Yeah. I mean, I'm using Mercury again. It was kind of easy to like, I can switch between them with one login. It's kind of cool.
You can just have two profiles, switch between two business entities. That's it.
Yep.
Morning, Ben.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, you sent me your spreadsheet and it's pretty wild, pretty good compared to what I was expecting. Well, I didn't have expectations. I was what I had done before when it had tried to make me, I don't remember what it was, but they were always unstyled, first of all, like just like raw, which for me, for my visual dyslexic brain of disabilities, like it's like reading Hebrew when it's like an unstyled spreadsheet.
It's a hard pass from me too. Yeah, the logic, it built like something that looked logical. I could make sense of it pretty quickly. But the key thing for me was that it digested all the financial information in a useful way and fixed the things about the old one that I didn't like. Like if we had a poor distribution week, some of the distribution values would go into the negative and I'd just have to like fudge some numbers, whereas now it's doing a much better job of managing like fixed costs like payroll and insurance and OPEX. It's doing a good job of holding those and then still maintaining some profit, even if it's like a low cash flow week. And then, I don't know. It's just got some nice smarts built into it in terms of how it's calculating those percentages into the distribution figures. I'm much happier with it. And it still does what I want it to be. It's such a useful tool for like plugging in scenarios and going, cool, what if I add a role? What if I give this person a pay rise? Like, what happens to my numbers? Where do blah, blah, blah. And it's dynamically adjusting all that stuff in a nice, easy way. Lock it.
Found the thing. I'm sending it to you.
Okay.
How to turn on backups.
No, in Airtable. Thanks.
I just happen to have the window open still. Automatically sync your bases to Google Drive. It was on at one point.
It's in Airtable. Cool.
Mm-hmm. And then I checked it again. It just disappeared. What the fuck? Okay, now it's on. Anyway. I don't have a lot to report on. Profit First, I've been just reshuffling ratios and I think the thing I would be like the next level for me is if I trusted something to digest my transactions live so that I could come to something like a spreadsheet or an assistant and just say, what do I need to do? And I suppose the next level of that is like, it starts to make transfers for you, which I know I'm not comfortable with, but I can actually automate Mercury through like Zapier.
Oh, really?
Which is interesting. I'm sure there's API stuff too. I am not giving any right access to money things.
Here, Kessa.
Maybe I'd let it pull Kessa. Data, but.
Here's my banking right. API.
Here you go.
Have fun.
Cloud Daddy's over there. I got a little different thing here. Let's see.
It's time for Things We Love.
The loudest.
Found it.
Loudest soundbite in history.
It's designed to deafen Jem a little bit each time. So, do you know of Cobra Frame Building on Instagram?
Yep.
Joe Roganbuck? Roganbuck? I don't know how to say his last name. You ever heard that thing where like people on the internet, like you don't conceive of their last names? You just were like, that's Jem. That's Justin.
Oh, yeah. I don't read names ever. I just sort of absorb the look of a handle. I never try and say it.
Yeah.
Yep.
He makes really amazing bike frame building tools. I've linked him in the show notes.
And
I think I met him at IMTS very quickly.
Oh, cool.
But super nice guy. He has started a second channel, which he calls Cobra HQ Plus on his YouTube. And it's just like, I think he's got the like Meta glasses or something, and he's just doing like no edit walkthroughs on like how to set up a lathe, how he uses his tool library. And it's like none of it's marketing. There's no like sell to it, because he actually, even his own products, he doesn't really market them in this. It's just, I think his intent, I can't remember if he said this at one some point, is just to like share knowledge in like a very genuine way. And he's like easy to listen to and enjoyable, and it's like kind of just following somebody around their shop and learning how they do things. And like, I've never set up a lathe, so I was like, it's pretty interesting. I would have never thought you do that thing, you know. So it's just all different types of stuff through his shop.
Cool.
So I've shared that. I liked it. It's
super
fun.
Cool.
I like the
idea. Has he been on Dylan's podcast?
I think so.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard him speak.
Sounds
and
maybe that's where I heard him. I think that's probably where
talk.
I heard of him.
Yeah. Cool. Check it out. Subscribed.
Subscribed.
Right.
I related this little guy called the Stop Lock. I saw in his video, and you, maybe not a useful thing for you, but when you're setting up vices, or like stuff in a fixture, especially vices, you like kind of want it to be in the same spot every time. And so instead of having like a fixed stop, this little guy is just an extruded aluminum piece with a tightener stop on it. So you set it up and then you can put your piece in the vise and always set it in the same spot. And there's two sides. And he had this in one of the videos and I was like, I love that. So I bought it. And then he recommended some thumb screws for it. So I got this.
Those things, like, you've had little widgets like that in videos before. I feel like they're good troll bait for, like, anything you put in a vise in a mill, you're going to get, like, a whole bunch of, like, trolly
just
comments around, not stiff enough.
Oh, no, yeah, I did. I have a video that's, like, something like a million some views because it was never intended to be, like, troll bait, but, like, all the, like, tough guys were like, that'll never work. Because it's this guy from, I forget his handle, but we've used it quite a bit. Not for production, but for like quick setups that you need to repeat a few times. It's got a magnet on it. So you magnet to the side of the base and it's got a precision rod. And it's just quick work stop setup. So you can take it off, put it back. It's like nothing I ever set up with that. I'm looking for like micron repeatability on a machine that doesn't do that anyway. these guys like... That magnet will move and you'll never, it'll, it's like, why are you so mad? Like what?
Who hurt you?
Who hurt your vice?
Cool. Zip, zip, zip.
What are you trying to consolidate?
Where? Who? Oh, yeah, my list.
Or just
my
making
list.
Excuses.
Yeah, the gem list refresh. Consolidating. I texted you that other thing the other day of like, I love Numi. It's the whole reason I went back to Mac ecosystem was just so I could get the Numi app. But
that's great.
And I use Numi calculator on the daily to manage my like weekly cash flow. That's my main task that I use it for. And I was like, this is shilly. Now that I've got this cursor agent managing my sales and comms, it needs to be able to plug in cash flow numbers as well when we win a job or it sees a Shopify payout come into the inbox. So I've just got like a little local HTML website that emulates Numi. And in theory, it's not perfect yet, but in theory, the agent can update it or I can update it and it just manages my weekly cash flow projection of like, I've got $15,000 to go before next distribution day. It's like, cool, okay, what nice. Do we got? Plug it in. So
very nice. Right.
Yeah, just trying to pull, yeah, consolidate, just like have less stuff and less in, feel like I've got data in so many places in terms of my daily workflow. Yeah. And just trying to simplify that. So I'm so scatterbrained anyway, like yes. I just need less distractions.
Right. That's
and maybe this is just one giant distraction.
Myself.
Yeah, exactly.
I was feeling absolutely insane. Like, I need to fix this. I've been thinking about that for 6 years at that point. Yeah, that's nice.
Mm. Oh, yeah. No, I don't have much else. Nice way to end the week. Chatting to you. Had a pretty low week. Just like, had a shit parenting week. It's been really hard.
God, same.
And so, yeah, this is nice. Thanks.
I like adult time too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
I mean, I have the same, like, kid has been off and on sick and out of daycare, just like keeps getting fevers, but then it's like fine during the day. It's just like,
oh, well.
I've forgotten all aspects of what kids do and said this to other parents. They're like, yep, that sounds normal. And I was like, okay, yeah, ready for that now, I suppose. Agreed. I just thought of something that I don't think I've shared here, but I'm curious if anybody has any experience or advice. I need to get moving on it, but I've thought about in the past, and I feel like this year we're finally at a place where I would like to consider going to things like IMTS, and the other one is IWF, which is the woodworking kind of version in Atlanta. And I've contacted IWF about being, whatever you want to call it, an exhibitor. I haven't talked to IMTS.
Ooh.
Obviously different types of products potentially at each, but I've heard people like, I think Jay Pearson talk about that they don't do shows because it's just a ton of cost. And then my new neighbor has been telling me about how amazing and like, groundbreaking show like going to conventions has been, because he sells toys that he's designed and he goes to a lot of them and sells out all the products he brings and then sells a lot of wholesaling a lot now too. And I'm inspired because I feel like it's potentially something we should do. And I don't know, it just depends on how much it costs and the ROI.
I've been completely different context in terms of what I'm selling, but I've always found the ROI so hard to pick on doing any sort of event. Like, you have great conversations, it feels really positive at time, and then it's like, cool, that was expensive. And then, like, I guess I never had any sort of thing in any system to actually track the effectiveness of it over time,
sure.
Of like where leads were coming from. Like, I haven't done shows for over 10 years, and so my sales processes are much more nuanced than it used to be, or much more systematic than it used to be. So I just had nothing in place to actually track or have any data on ROI. So it always just felt really floaty and weird. But yeah, I can imagine in certain industries, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, I've never known somebody, you know, like new shop neighbor here that Yeah, it's just his first beginning of the year, not to get into his details, but he was super busy because that was like when all the shows were, and he was just like one after another. And I was like,
yeah,
I was like, man, when you get back, I'd love to hear about this, because now I've never heard of somebody having that much success. I've just never talked to anybody else though, that like goes and does this. So a lot of times you see companies that are like IMTS, they're like multi-million dollar companies, $10 million companies plus, that big show, it's nothing for them. They just consider it part of the cost of doing business. You know, some people put a lot of effort going, but it's not like, you know, for me, if it's 20 grand, that's probably not doable. And maybe it could make it work if I knew there was going to be some big ROI from it, but like, it's hard to imagine selling enough product. And I think part of that is it's going to come over the next 18 months from people seeing you at that show, like all our advertising.
Yeah.
It's rarely instantaneous on a business scale. So anyway, if anybody has feedback or thoughts, be interested to hear.
Cool. Exciting. Cool.
All right. Mm-hmm. Lovely job, Lou.
I look forward to the Coding Daddy track and catch y'all next week. Daddy's home.
Oh.
highway hums beneath the wheels. 18 hours since my last meal, but Thursday's coming, I can feel the glow of VS Code. Laura's sleeping, kids are too, the workshop's dark, the day is through, but Daddy's got some prompts to do, some cursor tabs to load. Daddy only codes on Thursday nights when the house goes quiet and he dims the lights. Coffee cold and syntax tight, vibe coding till the morning light. Oh, Daddy stays up way too late. Sweet and low, here's a function, watch it flow. I should sleep, but I say no, just one more iteration. The screen reflects upon my face, ghost commits to some repo space. Tomorrow I'll forget this place, but tonight's a revelation. Daddy only codes on Thursday nights when the house goes quiet and he dims the lights. Coffee cold and syntax tight, vibe coding till the morning light. Oh, Daddy stays up way too late. Bloom like wildflowers in a digital room, and I promise myself, like I always do, I'll be sensible next week. The sun comes up on Castle Maine. I've shipped some bugs and gone insane, but Thursday called me once again, that siren song of code. Daddy only codes on Thursday night.